Welcome back to Alive at 5. I'm your host, David Leonard, and it's my pleasure to be joined on the phone this afternoon by author Colleen Kettenhofen. She has written a book entitled Secrets Your Boss Isn't Telling You. And folks, we know how tough it is out there in the job market these days, and if there's secrets that your boss isn't telling you, it might be to your advantage to find out what some of those secrets are. Good afternoon, Colleen.
Hi, David. Thank you for having me.
Well, I've been looking forward to visiting with you ever since I heard about your book, and because these are issues that just about anybody faces in their working life, and you're going to run into some of these situations that we'll be discussing here today. It's just inevitable. But before we get to that, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Colleen Kettenhofen?
Well, I started conducting training programs for largely managers and supervisors over 15 years ago, and since then, over the years, I've delivered over 1,100 programs in 48 states and 5 foreign countries. And sometimes I also will do programs for administrative staff or even sometimes engineers and other workers. But a lot of the work that I do is for managers and supervisors because, as you know, a lot of times they're promoted to leadership positions based on their hard skills or an outstanding job in a previous position, but they haven't necessarily had management training in people skills. So the last couple of years, when the economy started to take a nosedive, I thought, you know, I have so much information that bosses have shared with me over the years that I think workers could really benefit from in terms of how to keep their boss happy and hopefully keep their job, maybe even, you know, gain more recognition or a raise, and, you know, what are bosses' biggest pet peeves. So in a lot of my programs, I would start to break people up into groups in the seminars, and I would ask the managers, supervisors, if I had a group of employees sitting here right now, what would you tell them are your top 10 biggest pet peeves that they need to avoid and why? And then in groups, they would pick a recorder to write that down, and then I would have them pick a speaker, team lead, and we would go around the room, and I would literally write down their top pet peeves. So I did this week after week, month after month, for probably a period of about 7 or 8 months, and then I would literally go back to my office, and I would tabulate the results. And so I almost could have stopped asking after interviewing about 100 managers, but if any of you can relate to me, boy, if 100 is good, 200 must be even better. So I interviewed over 200 managers, as well as a handful of top executives. And also in my book, there's a chapter, View from the Top, where I interviewed CEOs to ask some of the same questions. So those were two of the chapters that I really thought people could benefit from.
It sounds like a very in-depth and very serious research process that you were going through to get this information.
It was, and I'm surprised at how open people were. I mean, I could understand it if I'm on an airplane and talking with somebody who's sitting right next to me. Kind of with the CEOs, I could understand them being pretty open when it was a phone call. Having said that, I'm surprised at, even in an open environment, how people were pretty no-holds-barred. And the thing, too, that I realized was that all of these managers and supervisors, a few of them were team leads, they've got bosses too. So this was good information for them to know in terms of bosses' biggest pet peeves, what do they want to see for employees to be considered exemplary, since, you know, for most of them, they have to answer to someone too.
We all work for somebody else,
yes.
one way or another, except for the few people that are self-employed, and even they have to please their customers.
You know, that's it. It's really my customers are my bosses, and really some of the information that they were giving me in terms of the pet peeves, it really would apply to business owners as well, with your customers and clients, like you said.
Let's visit about this a little bit, Colleen. Start any place you care to and fill us in about some of the top 10 pet peeves that bosses and managers related to you.
Well, the first one's pretty obvious, so I'll go that one. I'll go over that one pretty quickly. Number one, excessive absenteeism and chronic tardiness. Like the people who show up late and leave so early, they leave skid marks. Or also, as part of number one, was somebody who shows up on time, but they're what I call the social butterfly, where the first hour is social hour. So, like it or not, as you've probably figured out, people are looking to see what time people come in, what time they leave, if they're showing up. Number two, this was a really big one, and I think even if somebody's not a manager, this would be a big pet peeve: negativity. In other words, subversiveness, lack of buy-in, the chronic complainers who either want you, the coworker, to solve their problems, or you, the manager, or they really don't want solutions. They just want to be able to complain. And third on the list ties into the chronic complainer, and that is the word I kept hearing: drama. High drama people, whether it's the gossips. As a matter of fact, while we're having this interview, what do you think the gossips are doing? Gossiping about you. No, I'm just kidding. You're thinking, no, that's exactly what
you
doing.
You could very well be right.
The people who start the rumor mill, what I call the water cooler instigators. They like to stand around the water cooler, gossip, they start the rumors. I also call these people pot stirrers. They have that desire for dissension. Also, as part of number three, what I kept hearing, people who talk about their personal lives all day, every day, and everybody has to hear about it. So I've got a lot more than that, but those were just the top three.
You know, Colleen, we can stop right there for just a moment. I wanted to talk to you about this because, wow. I mean, those three right there, over the course of my working career in the various places I worked, I've had plenty of experience with all those kinds of folks. But you know what was coming across to me when you were describing those situations and those types of people? It seems to me that what the manager, what the boss in that situation is really unhappy with, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what they're really unhappy with is this employee's lack of focus and attention to their job. You come to work to work. That's why you're being compensated for being here. And you have an obligation to your employer, I think, to put out a good product, whether that's a good interview on the air or whether that's an A-plus widget in a factory. Whatever it is, you have that obligation because you're getting compensated to do that. And therefore, you need to be focused on what you're doing while you're here. If you're spending the first hour at work buffing your nails and visiting about what your kids did at the soccer game last night, I can tell you're laughing, so you can relate to this.
Yes.
Your focus is lacking, and I think that's really what the boss is unhappy with in those situations.
You're absolutely right. It's the focus, and then what a lot of them said to me is the effect it has on the other employees, because now it brings down their morale because they're having to put up with it. If the manager is non-confrontational and doesn't deal with it, the other thing is some people start to think, well, my gosh, if that person gets away with it, I might as well do the same thing, and you can't terminate, as you know, one employee for certain behavior, but allow it with somebody else. So it's kind of like if they're allowed to get away with it, they become like a cancer that spreads. And that's where I come in with a lot of the training that I do. And I also do a lot of speaking for conferences and for conventions, even for people who are looking for a job, because it's one thing to look for a job, but then how do you keep the job? The other thing a lot of bosses said to me is, Colleen, I feel like I'm everybody's babysitter. I don't want to be a referee. And you may have been in jobs where you feel like you're running an adult daycare or working in an adult daycare. I'm also finding with employees, when you had mentioned the issue about focus, I'm finding that some people are telling me there's what I call the high-performance, high-maintenance employee. So even if an employee is high-performance and overall they're a quick, steady, intelligent, and doing their job, if they're still negative, high-drama, they become high-maintenance for everybody. And in some cases, bosses still want them out.
It seems to me that one of the dangers as you describe a non-confrontational boss, I think one of the dangers I can see with that type of approach to management is that you're risking negatively changing the entire culture of your company, your business, your organization. As you said, if other people see these things going on and being tolerated, morale suffers. Other people decide, well, if he can do it, I can do it. And that is absolutely poison to a business.
Yeah, it really changes the emotional landscape. And like I said, more and more I'm hearing of some people who are coming up to me, and especially if I'm at a corporation and their boss isn't there, well, they will say, Colleen, my boss is non-confrontational, and with this one employee I'm having to work with, I'm getting to where I don't want to come to work anymore.
And so at that point, are you able to provide some kind of a magic wand, perhaps, that would help that person deal with the situation?
You know what? I can give you some, certainly for your listeners, you know, people who are the coworkers, and then also for somebody who is the boss. I think magic wand number one, and I talk about this in my book, Seven Magic Wands is one of the chapters for making difficult people disappear. And if you've ever noticed that a negative interaction with somebody you'd call a difficult person, when you have that interaction, it can set the tone for the entire day and even into the evening. And if you've ever struggled to shake off that, what I call negative aftertaste, and you told yourself, hey, just ignore that person and move on, but the feeling lingers, what can you do? Well, the difficult conversations mar your day because you become so bothered, you keep processing the emotions evoked by the interaction. So to blunt the impact, save this processing for later. How do you accomplish that? By immediately stepping into a positive environment. So, for example, at your earliest break, even if it's not till lunch because people are so busy they don't even know what breaks are anymore, go have a cup of coffee with a friend, or quickly call up a friend of yours or your spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend, whomever. Make plans for the weekend, you know, plan that movie you're going to see, or just for a couple of minutes, read the comics, laugh about something. Because if you can start getting into a positive environment right away, you'll gain a new perspective for processing your emotions, and it just helps to blunt the impact. The other thing that you can do is engage in an activity that uses a lot of brain cells. For example, I remember having a difficult conversation with a relative earlier this spring. Well, when I hung up the phone, I was so upset. At the same time, it was getting close to the tax deadline. Well, I don't particularly like doing my taxes, and who does? I did find, though, that when I got involved in that activity, it helped me to stop processing and dwelling on that whole situation. So immediately go into a positive environment of some sort so that you can counteract that aftertaste and not think about that difficult person for the rest of the day. Also, just don't be around them as much as possible. I'm tempted to say don't be around them when they're in a bad mood. Be around them when they're in a good mood. But you might be thinking, what if they're never in a good mood? Don't be around them any more than you have to be, and stay very objective, especially if this is a boss, because with some people, if you try to avoid them, especially people that like power and control, sometimes they'll sense that you're intimidated and they'll come after you even more. And that was great advice that a boss gave me when I once worked for a publisher who was very difficult. I wanted to avoid her, and I remember my immediate supervisor saying, "You know what, Colleen? Don't avoid her, because when you avoid people like that, they tend to come after you even more."
Never let them see you sweat.
Yes, it's so true.
We're visiting this afternoon with Colleen Kettenhofen. She is the author of Secrets Your Boss Isn't Telling You. Colleen, one of the things that I hear you saying there is that when you have a bad situation with somebody, a negative situation, the first thing that you need to do is to take responsibility for your own emotions and your own emotional well-being and do what it takes to make yourself feel a little bit better and allow yourself to step back from that situation.
Yes, it's almost like you want to step outside the situation, because you know what it's like when a friend or a relative has come to you and they've just had a very difficult interaction and they're all worked up, and you're able to stay calm because you're on the outside looking in. So it is almost as if you want to put yourself on the outside and almost say, okay, if this were a friend of mine, what would I suggest they do? What would my advice be to them? And of course, the first thing you would do is tell them not to say anything that they're going to regret. One thing I like to say is, with difficult people, be careful what you say, because once those words are out, they're hard to take away.
No doubt about that. And like I said, I think it really one of the keys here is that a person takes responsibility for the way they are feeling. After all, if you ruminate and you allow what you're actually doing is you're allowing this person to continue ruining your day. Maybe you'll think about it for several days, through a whole weekend, whatever it is. But the bottom line is, all you're doing is giving them free space in your head. They don't deserve it. You need to take responsibility and step back from that.
Oh, David, that's so true. I think I heard somebody say, you know, don't let them occupy the space in your mind for free, or something about it. I think that's so true. People have to take responsibility, and I know you've heard that before, and yet it's so true, because there are people who are just never going to change, and some of those people, they know how they are, but if it's working for them and there's no negative consequences, there's no incentive to change. And actually, switching gears for a minute, that's what I tell managers and supervisors. You have to nip it in the bud early on, because otherwise it starts to look as if you're enabling the behavior. And then the employees start to think, why is he or she not doing anything about it? And as I explain in my management training, it really starts to become a negative reflection on the boss more than on the difficult person if they don't do anything about it.
Absolutely. They're not doing their job.
Mm-hmm. And don't you think a lot of this applies in your personal life as well, that, you know, anybody would be bothered by somebody who's chronically late or just doesn't show up? But I think especially the negativity and the high drama. I love the quote by Lou Holtz, who says, "Know why you shouldn't tell people your problems? 80% of the people don't care, and the other 20% are glad you have them."
Oh, I like that. I've never heard that one before.
Uh-huh.
That's very good. Colleen, let's talk about some of the things that people need to know in order to keep their bosses happy. Now, some of the stuff might seem to be common sense, but then again, as we know, common sense really is not terribly common.
Oh, you just took the words right out of my mouth. That's so true. Well, the first thing, of course, show up and begin the work on time, because some managers that I talk to, it really rattles them if, yes, somebody shows up on time, but they go into the break room and they're chatting and, you know, they're in there for 20, 30 minutes and it kind of becomes a rhymes with which session. The second thing that people can do to keep their boss happy and hopefully keep their job. And I heard this phrase over and over, team player. That actually ranked as the second top trait or behavior bosses want. And what they said to me was, sure, productivity, you know, is an important reason for this, but the effect that being a team player has on the morale of others scored even higher than productivity. And what they said to me was willingness to help others, anyone, in terms of sharing job knowledge, skills, and ideas, as well as willingness to help customers. Number three, being proactive and solutions oriented. And it's interesting because when I ask them about the traits that they think are most important for somebody to be considered a good employee, the phrase I kept hearing over and over was above and beyond. I really like the employees, they would say, that go above and beyond. So that's interesting. In this economy, they're expecting that. So above and beyond, solutions oriented, you know, kind of goes back to not being the complainer. Number four was people who hold a positive, enthusiastic, can-do attitude and don't bring problems to work. And number five, be willing to learn. Bosses told me, and even a lot of CEOs with the people who are right under them, like the executive vice presidents, senior vice presidents, all of these people said they like employees who, for lack of a better phrase, are malleable, teachable, and trainable. And a lot of them said if they had a choice between high skill and high will, even though we would all choose both, they would go more for high will than high skill if they had to choose one. In other words, the person who is teachable and willing to learn.
I'm curious, Colleen, what did bosses and managers tell you about communication in terms of how that ranks with their employees? In other words, the level of communication they expect and appreciate from an employee.
One thing that came up was with the youngest generation, the people who are coming in, with the people who are coming in right out of school. A big pet peeve for a lot of people, even the younger employees, and by younger I mean late 20s, early 30s, is that so much of communication is texting or email. And a lot of people said, you know, Colleen, we've got people who sit 8 feet away from each other in cubicles, and every now and then a delicate issue will come up, something that really needs to be brought up in person, but that the person will choose email. And I'm also hearing nowadays, you know, David, we would always say calling in sick. More and more I'm hearing from organizations that young people are texting in sick. And you might be thinking, oh, so can we text back? You're fired?
Yeah, I mean, I can see where somebody might have that response.
So really setting the ground rules, because I'm really hearing that there is a lack of communication. Technology is great. I like to say social media can be an organization's best friend regarding visibility, but it's fast becoming its greatest foe regarding employee productivity.
I can understand that, because I think just about anybody in the workplace has known somebody that spends far too much time on that internet, on Facebook, whatever it is.
Yes, yes, and so that's what I'm hearing. So just, you know, messages easily get misconstrued when they're via email. The other thing that I'm hearing from employees and bosses alike, and like I said, even I'm hearing this from people who are, you know, late 20s, early 30s on up, they feel that the young people right out of school, the phrase they'll often say to me is, it's like they can't communicate in full sentences.
And that is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because of all the texting. So
sure.
I don't shoot the messenger. This is just what I am hearing.
Absolutely. Colleen, this has been a very interesting conversation for me here today. I really enjoyed visiting with you. And if we have a listener out there that would like to get a copy of your book, Secrets Your Boss Isn't Telling You, or take a look at your website, how would they go about doing that?
The website, David, is www.bouncebackhire.com. And that's bouncebackhire, H-I-G-H-E-R. bouncebackhire.com. Also, the book Secrets Your Boss Isn't Telling You is on Amazon as well. And on the website, we have free articles, we have audios, CDs on every topic, pretty much from how to deal with difficult people, dealing with a difficult boss, how to improve your presentation skills, and a lot more, a lot of the things we're talking about today.
Very good. Colleen, I want to take a moment now to thank you for spending some time with us here today on Alive at 5. We've really appreciated hearing from you.
Oh, thank you, David. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, it's been fun. That's Colleen Kettenhoven joining us today. She is the author of Secrets Your Boss Isn't Telling You. Keep it tuned right here to Yankton's home team, AM 1450 KYNT. Alive at 5. We'll be right back after this.